Martin Heidegger claimed that idle talk is something that anyone can take up, which releases one from the task of genuinely understanding. He wrote of public disclosedness of being with one another where the loudest idle talk and the most ingenious curiosity keeps things moving. Where, in an everyday manner, everything and at bottom nothing is happening. We have a different view. We believe that the only way to reach the truth is by talking. Like a man panning for gold in a dung heap, in amongst the blither blather, bad puns and nonsense, one might find a single grain of truth. This is Idle Talk. Open your mind and then your mouth.
This is Idle Talk, and tonight we are talking lies, 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 all lies, dirty lies, white lies, lies upon lies, fibbing, porky pies. The topic is lies. Unless, of course, I'm lying and we're actually going to just talk about, the news. Let's do a whole show about the news, because that's never been done before. This is Idle Talk. If you don't know the topic by now, then you really are too daft to be listening tonight. So, going to start off with a rather peculiar question. We are broadcasting live from Plato's Cave. This is Idle Talk, a hopefully accessible and fun philosophy show. And we always like to start with quite a weird question. And we just want answers. Preferably, if you guys want to Skype in, that is the best way to get in touch. Or you can get in the chat box. As so many of you doing tonight, jump into Plato's Cave. Togas of your choice of style and colour are available at the mouth of the cave. And you can get debating. oneradio.org/S. If you are listening on the podcast, don't feel excluded just because of this fickle thing called the concept of time, which we may or may not have invented or we may have discovered. That's a huge topic for another show, perhaps. You can email me, radio@rodders.com. If you're listening on the podcast, just tell me your comments. Empty your head into the email. Well, as long as it's relevant and on topic, I don't want to know about your marriage falling apart. And so many other listeners having marital problems. So, the question today is, if someone were at your door to murder your friend who is hiding in your house, and the murderer knocks on the door and the murderer says, "Oi, where's your mate?" What would you do? So, someone, your friend's hiding in the house, hiding from a murderer. Murderer rings the doorbell and says, "Is Ken hiding in the house? I really need to murder him. It's I've been trying to do this all week, and it's yet another thing on my to-do list." What would you do? Would you lie? Would you lie to him? Would you lie to him? He's gonna kill your mate. He will smash his little face. Will you lie to him? Will you lie to him is the question. Because tonight we're talking about lies. And lying generally is considered wrong. Yet, what would be the consequence of you not lying in this case is your friend dying. Speaking of friends used in the broadest, I guess, of terms. Nicola, freelance illustrator and co-host of the show. How are you doing tonight?
These introductions are getting worse and worse.
Yeah, it used to be freelance illustrator extraordinaire. Now it's
just talking about friends in the broadest sense of the word.
Here it is.
Last time it was novel idiot.
And you coined the phrase novel idiot. I said I like your naive approach to philosophy, i.e. you haven't formally studied it. Yeah, you've got a working brain, so it's always
I condensed that to novel idiot.
Well, no, you misinterpreted it and took umbrage.
Condensed.
You didn't condense. You twisted my words. You lied. You lied to me. So,
yeah.
This is indeed a strange question. We want your answers on this. In the shout box, a murderer comes to the door and then asks, "Is your mate in?" And if you can lie and say, "No, sorry," he'll go. And that will save your friend. Or, in the name of truth, you just go, "Well, he's hiding in the cupboard." "Oh no, why did you tell him?" Sorry again, I just can't lie. But maybe it seems a strange question, but that's what we deal in tonight, strange questions. And we will use this very weird thought experiment to examine different philosophers' interpretation on morality and specifically lies. Because morality is, well, it's a massive topic, so we're going to try and focus it down to lies tonight. So if you're feeling brave, pick up the phone, reach us here at Plato's Cave. The Skype name is rodders.com, rhodders.com. Free call, obviously. And, or get in touch in the shout box. Just gut reaction. Don't think too much about it, because there's no real right or wrong. It's a moral issue. You could argue quite plausibly either way, as we'll find out. But I really think there's going to be a gut consensus on this. But I don't want to put words into your mouth. I could misrepresent you. We're going to take a short break. Just answer that question. Murderer comes to the door, asks, look, I need to kill your friend. He's hiding. Do you lie and say, sorry, I don't know where he is? This is Idle Talk. Tonight's topic is lies. Or is it?
Idle Talk on One Radio. Idle Talk on One Radio.
This is Idle Talk. Tonight we are talking lies. We started off tonight's show with a rather peculiar question. A murderer comes to the door asking to murder your best friend. Your best friend is, of course, sensible and is hiding from the murderer. The murderer then says, where's your mate? I'm going to kill him. And do you lie? What responses have we had in Nicola? Quite a few. Quite a couple.
Chris, it would depend on how good a mate they were.
That is a really, really disturbing answer. I expected everyone to go, well, of course I'd lie to save my friend. That would justify lying.
Now, the only responses we've had is that, and depends on if my mate owes me money.
Well, I think they are morally dubious. So, how good a mate do you... if they're not a very good mate, if they're a casual acquaintance, you'd throw them under a bus. Is what Chris is saying. Well, Chris, you disgust me. It's terrible, terrible. that's awful, isn't it? Well, yeah.
If it was an acquaintance from work, I'd maybe just go, yeah, they're in the cupboard.
go and stab them.
More than my life's worth. But, you know.
So if they'd... Well, how many birthdays in a row do they have to measure? how many birthdays in a row do they have to remember in order to measure up to our expectations?
is that what constitutes a friend?
SB says, I think lying is okay when it's done for pure intentions or for a more fair outcome. We have a consequentialist in the cave. A consequentialist has entered the cave, everyone. That's good. So SB is justifying what would normally be considered a immoral action by saying it's okay so long as the outcome is for the greater good. SB says lies equalizes to fairness. That's a controversial thing to say. How on earth do you work that one out? So you think it's the fair thing to do is to lie to save your friend. Trouble is, fairness is another one of these really slippery terms that politicians band about that we actually don't know what it means. We could do a whole... I'm considering in later date doing a whole show on just the concept of fairness, because I did a module on it at uni, and it was very interesting, because does fairness imply impartiality, that we treat everyone equally, or does it require that we all meet people's needs? See, we could go on all night about that.
I think you will have to do that before I understand what that statement even means.
Chris, she is now saying, I'd also say it was okay to lie to save someone's feelings. So you'd save someone's feelings, but not their life. It is good to have someone with...
He redeemed himself by saying... She redeemed herself by saying, oh, if it's my best friend, I would lie through my teeth, because he'd do the same for me.
Aw, so yeah, I guess there's some sense in that. But it's good that we have uneven moral parameters being set all over the shop tonight in the cave. But all opinions are welcome. As people in the news keep saying, oh, I'm perfectly entitled to an opinion. Yeah, but being entitled to an opinion and having a valid opinion is an entirely different thing. But we're not too worried about validity. Be as fallacious as you want tonight. I'm not gonna mind. It's just good to get everyone thinking tonight. So we're gonna come back to that rather peculiar question. Most people, my gut reaction is, well, of course I'd lie. Even if I admit that in most circumstances lying is wrong, I'd be prepared to commit the sin of lying in order to... to save my friend, because suddenly it's the lesser of two evils, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure it really counts if you're lying to a potential murderer.
Yeah, I know. It seems like it could be, in some ways, slightly more justifiable.
Yeah.
But we will come on to that later. We want to talk about Immanuel Kant, a German philosopher, who was incredibly influential as far as moral philosophy is concerned. The way I think generally, maybe correct me if you think this is wrong, Nicola, do you think most people are consequentialists in their attitude to morality nowadays, i.e. it's all right for me to do something that could be considered wrong so long as the outcome's okay.
That's kind of how you have to be to survive, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems practical, doesn't it? But the thing is, being practical and being right may not be the same thing. Kant was a deontologist. He argued, he was basically against consequences. He said actions were intrinsically good or intrinsically bad in themselves. It's the action, not the outcome. Therefore, if you did something, if you carried out an action which is categorically good, intrinsically good, and it just so happened, as a result of that, someone got hurt, you would not be blameworthy, you would not be responsible for the accident, so your morality would still be intact. You've got to kind of, it seems crazy, but to try and just remove the consequences.
So you mean if you said, yes, they're in the cupboard, then...
It's an accident. It's moral
luck. But
it's
not, because you know... It's not like, oh, in hindsight, that was a bad decision. You know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think in a court of law, they would say, well, the outcome was so... I can't remember the exact term, but there's a term that means that... It's in manslaughter cases. It's like, if it was blooming obvious that driving a car into a building, although there was this legal case in which some prisoners, they blew up... Yes, someone tried to bust them out of jail with dynamite. They miscalculated the amount of dynamite and killed the people living next to the prison. They blew up a house as well as the prison wall. The intention was not to murder those people, but the consequence was so obviously going to happen. It was like Chuckle Brothers meets dynamite. It was just something so obvious was going to go wrong that you just think you have to hold them at least a bit responsible, it seemed, and it almost seems like that with the Kant and the murdering case. Tim writes in and says, it's good that your uni let you do a course on fairness. To not do so could have caused an infinite loop, an infinite loop, an infinite loop, an infinite loop. So, yeah, no, well, some people at university do go on this infinite loop. It's called resitting.
Hey.
So, something is only good if it's good in itself. This has two main implications. First, moral actions cannot have impure motives. So it can't be based on some secondary motivation. So even if I'm giving to charity, I can't give to charity because for the sole reason it makes me look good. And I want to be an upstanding, I want people to think I'm an upstanding member of the community. Putting that sort of example, it doesn't seem quite so... Taken away from the extreme examples of murder, to only give to charity because it makes you look good, not because you care about, say, the hospice that the charity is supporting, not because you feel sorry.
If you believe that, then charities would get so much less of what they get, because so much of people giving to charity so they can put photos on Facebook of them doing a fun run.
But that's, according to Kant, that would be wrong. And you could say, look at it in forget the practicalities, forget that charities now act as businesses and have to reach quotas, etc. Just look at the action in itself.
But think of how many people giving money to charity genuinely only do it because they want to give money to charity, and then take all the rest of them away, and they'd get barely anything, surely.
But then that's you're being a consequentialist. You are saying, well, it doesn't matter the motives as long as the outcome. That's what you're doing. You're in this consequentialist bubble. Look at it from a deontologist point of view. Look at it from a pure reason and action point of view.
No, I get that, but it's a very idealistic view of the world. I don't think humans never have that amount of good in them that they think like that.
And Kant basically believed that he basically sort of almost plucks things out of the air and then says, well, any reasonable person could actually sort of just go along with that. Because he says morality is discoverable by reason. There is something called the categorical imperative, which is the rule that governs our morality. And this categorical imperative is discovered by reason and reason alone. And sometimes doing the reasonable thing, doing the good thing, isn't necessarily the easiest or the least painful route. And he said that Kant is one of his main, most pithy quotes is, duty for duty's sake. The only reason you should carry out something is because it's good in its own. You have a duty. You have a duty to do it for the good.
I think probably most of the lies that I tell are because it's the easiest thing to do rather than... I don't think I've ever told a lie with malicious intent. Well, I mean, I probably have, but I never really do. It's usually to spare people's feelings or because it's easier.
When Kant sets we'll come back to lying in a bit, because when Kant sets moral rules, moral imperatives, he says that they can't be internally contradictory. Gordon Bennett is a hard word to say. Can you say them for me?
Contradictory? What?
Yeah, that's the one. They can't contradict themselves. And also, you've got to will them to be universalised. So one rule has got to apply to everything.
But the problem is that that makes everything black and white, and it's not like when you're talking about lying, you've got two people involved usually, or more, and sort of that automatically there's contradictions going to be there, surely. It's never going to be what's good for everyone, because everyone's got different intentions and things.
But weirdly enough, we still come to these sort of ideas through a consequentialist route. With rule consequentialism, we set rules on what is most likely to have the biggest outcome. So you still get these broad generalisations. Kant would say, we're going to come on to why Kant says lying is wrong in a minute, but I just want to briefly summarise in the sort of, this is, you know, don't put this, if anybody quotes Idle Talk in their dissertation, woe betide you, and you should be marked down severely. So in the most sort of glib summary ever, Kant says you can, consequences not important, it is the action itself which is important. Actions are intrinsically good or intrinsically bad. People must be used as ends in themselves, not means. So it's not acceptable to use people to gain something. People must be respected as people. They are means they're ends in themselves, not means to other ends. And also the categorical imperative is the moral law, the good that presides over how we should act. This can be discovered by using our reason, and what is practical may or may not coincide with this, because a lot of arguments against Kant is, oh, it's not practical. It wasn't really meant to be practical in the sense. Attaining the greatest good or the summum bonum shouldn't be easy. Otherwise, what would be the point? We'd all be around with the summum bonum. Kant's sort of weird nebulous, that's a big word that was really pointless for me. I just want to use the word nebulous, isn't that awful? Kant's sort of very big word just meaning the greatest good, the summum bonum, and you can only attain the summum bonum through living your life morally and conforming to the rule of the categorical imperative. You discover what's right. Everyone knows what's right. You just have to think about it. And when Kant told this, he didn't view himself as teaching morality. He was basically helping people to work it out for themselves. And also, if you set a moral law, Kant says it can't contradict itself, and it has got to be universalised. You've got to will that everybody would accept and act upon that law, and if that causes problems, then that law should not be adopted. This is Idle Talk, exclusively on oneradio.org.
Having a rave in Plato's cave.
Good evening, this is Idle Talk. Tonight we have been talking about lies, porky pies, any other sort of silly terms for the word lie. I do like the phrase porky pies, but we summarise Kant. He's things are good in themselves. You discover what is moral by using your noggin, using reason. He is a deontologist.
Whoop-de-doo! What does it all mean, Basil?
We're coming to that. But we started the show with a rather peculiar question, didn't we, Nicola?
Yes, we did.
We asked whether... What would you do, right? Murderer comes to your door, says, I need to kill your best mate. Where is he? In reality, he's hiding in a cupboard. Do you lie and say, sorry, I don't know where he is. Maybe he went to Morocco or something. And the murderer goes, oh, all right, then thanks for your help. Sorry to trouble you at this time of the morning. And the murderer goes on his way. And your mate then comes out the cupboard and just goes... and lives to not be murdered another day. What would you do in that ridiculous situation?
Well, yes, you lie,
although
don't you?
Things must have happened like that. I know it's an informal fallacy to bring up Hitler or the Nazis in any argument, but there must have been instances where the Gestapo came round knocking on doors looking for Jews and a minority of good people just said no Jews here. No, it's like Anne Frank's family were hiding. I know eventually they got shop.
Yeah, they came and asked, didn't they? They got, and the bloke downstairs was like, nah, they ain't here, mate.
But eventually they got betrayed, didn't they, by someone. I think I believe. But yeah, that's sort of an example, is that Anne Frank was hiding in the attic and they didn't say, oh yeah, sure, she's Anne Frank is hiding in the secret attic.
Oh, damn, I knew this would happen. Well, I'm not allowed to lie because that's bad. So I guess they're upstairs.
I was just hoping the brown shirts weren't going to ask any questions. Oh, dear.
This would be so much easier if nobody asked.
Yeah, so... if you'd like to Skype in, the Skype name is rodders.com, rhoddeis.com. Just want opinions and thoughts. Let's go to what Kant would think specifically of this example. He would say you are morally obliged to tell the truth, and so be it that your friend gets killed. That may sound absurd, but he's talking in a very broad sense. He's saying, how would you formulate a law of that? Because you can see lying is wrong because it's because you can say lying is wrong, people shouldn't lie, and if everybody adheres to that imperative, then things are better, aren't they, really? This isn't why Kant would argue with it, because he just says lying is bad in itself and you discover that through reason. But look, kind of assess Kant practically.
I can see my hello yeah there we go
you're on
I can, I can see what he's going for, bless him, but he's trying to assign one law to everything.
Exactly what he's trying. But Charlie, it is very hard. Couldn't have an imperative that was, oh well, some lying is wrong, but sometimes it's okay. That makes a nonsense. It's like the way the law works. It says murder is wrong, doesn't it? That's the way the law works. Murder is wrong. Murder is not sometimes okay. That's not what the law says.
Well, no, it says murder is wrong, but it also has a system in place whereby if, in extreme circumstances, somebody is trying to kill you and you murder them back, they'll kind of go, you know...
But you still couldn't will something like that as a universal law. You couldn't say, well, okay, sometimes it's all right to lie. And also, if you say, if I lie, then it's okay for everyone to lie, and then suddenly the whole institution of trust is undermined.
Okay, yeah, but that's a basic rule. But if you asked anybody involved with the law... is murder always wrong under every circumstances? They'd say no. Surely.
But it's never right, is it?
No, but sometimes it's the lesser of two evils. But what Kant's saying is lying is always wrong under every circumstances.
He also says it's wrong because lying is not treating someone as an end of themselves, but merely as a means. And
which surely also makes no sense.
I think that makes sense.
Sorry, I'm sure he was a great guy. I really hate to disagree with everything he says. I'm sure he had, you know, I'm sure he was lovely.
Nice hair.
I'm sure he had lovely hair.
I'm sure he's bald.
But actually, he had a funny nose. Did I see a picture of him?
And also, there is the argument that if your friend was killed, then it's not your responsibility. It's not really your fault at all. The good or bad results of an action that is owed, like the results of for example, if you do something and something accidentally happens, it's good. You shouldn't be rewarded for that because it wasn't you who did it. And likewise, the results of an action that you couldn't, the results of him being killed, it was just an accident. You didn't kill him.
No, but if someone comes to your door with an axe saying, "I would like to murder your friend, please," are they in there? And you have an opportunity to say no, and they will nicely leave. You've probably got a bit of a responsibility there.
SB says, but the trouble with this is that it relies on all of us with our own attributes of fairness, so that this relies on some deeper shared sense of ethics, which Rodders can hopefully explain. Yeah, this is the hard thing about Kant. He just says, well, we'll use your reason. Trouble is, people aren't very good at being... Even if Kant is correct, it's very, very difficult because, essentially... But this isn't really an argument against Kant. Because just because we're crap at using reason doesn't mean it's not the way to...
Well, he doesn't think we should use reason, does he? He just thinks we should use his reason, which is
bad. Kant says use reason, and any reasonable person can attain and follow the categorical imperative just by using their reason. It's like a sort of an a priori bit of knowledge that's in your brain. Like, you can just figure it out by doing something sensible. So that's what Kant's reckoning. So just because people are rubbish, but see, this is a really hard thing. Kant just seems to sort of base all his arguments on everything being the same. So SB is saying that I don't know, but, oh, SB, don't use the word fairness. That makes things very complicated. He says, the trouble is that it relies upon all of us and our own attributes of fairness. But yeah, I see what he's saying. I think SB's he's saying that it all relies on us being able to access this reason, this categorical imperative. But then Kant would just say, well, you're just doing it wrong, aren't you? You're doing reason wrong. But then, is there really... What if you argue the other way and saying there isn't this reason, there isn't this greatest good that we all can attain to, there's just sort of stuff going on. It does seem to be relying on something rather big and outside this world, isn't it?
I don't think you can really say that lying in any sense is treating a person as a means rather than an end, like he says.
When Kant, going back to this thing of saying, well, it's not really your fault if your friend gets murdered, when Kant says the harm was an accident, he does not mean that it couldn't have been foreseen. Rather, he just said it's an unintended byproduct of one's actions. By contrast, if someone lies in an effort to save the victim and the lie happens to have a bad consequence, one is responsible for those consequences, even if they were neither foreseen or intended.
I don't... That's ridiculous, though, because you know that it's going to happen. I know, like, if you're in a really difficult situation and, you know, you're only human, sometimes you have to just tell the truth and you wouldn't be blamed for it. But in this example, anything like this, where you know so clearly what's going to happen and you can, all you have to do is lie and you're out of it and it's fine.
I think in the most general of terms, Kant's thing makes sense. Like, it seems nice that we only give to charity because of duty for duty's sake, because it's the right thing to do.
But that doesn't happen in the real world.
But that's what I'm saying. In the broadest of terms, it is, like, you can say in the broadest of terms that it's that lying is wrong, because in general it's a very bad thing, and you couldn't ever will that lying was okay.
I love the idea that it's so simple that all you have to think about in any situation is it right or is it wrong? Oh, it's lying, so it's wrong. That would be great, but it doesn't work like that, does it, ever?
No. But then it works in... You can see how it works in the broad abstract. This is when... because it just, when you suddenly put it into this ridiculous thought experiment with a very specific, because you can all, I think you can always invent an exception to a rule.
Okay, yeah, this is a very unrealistic context, and it's never going to happen.
And Siobhan, you're on the show. Evening. Good evening.
Hello.
You all right? Well, what's your thoughts on Kant and lying?
Well, I have a good story where I lied once, and it really didn't help me out in the long run.
Right.
It's not very philosophical, though.
It's not very philosophical. Well, let's go off on a tangent then, all right. Can we put a Kantian message into this?
Maybe you can crowbar one in.
Okay, let's crowbar and tangent. What happened, Siobhan?
Well, this is one of the first times, because I don't like lying, so this is one of the first times that a little white lie just embarrassed me in the long run. When I was in year 8, a load of girls were talking about who had kissed a boy, and everyone asked me if I had, and I was like, yeah, I've done that. And then the thing is, I thought, like, oh, well, no one will pick me up on this, because I hadn't. And then loads of girls came running over and were like, oh, my God, I can't believe you've kissed a boy. You're the only one that's done it. And I was like, oh, no, that's not worked. So I said, oh, no, I was just saying it because I thought everyone else had. And then that made me look silly.
Oh, God.
So I would say the rule of thumb for Siobhanian philosophy is if you're going to lie, keep the lie going. You can't go back on your lie because it just goes into even more trouble.
But let's examine that from a moral perspective. Kant would say that is wrong. It's a weird one, because really that lie didn't harm anyone but you.
I know.
But it was wrong in the sense that you were deceiving. It was wrong in the sense that you couldn't will that as a universal... Actually, what if you willed this as a universal law? That whenever someone was asked whether they had been kissed by someone, they said yes. What would happen then?
Don't know. It could. It depends who it is.
It could break up a few marriages, I imagine.
Yeah, we had actually at school when I did philosophy of religion. We did Kant and lying, and they always used a really weird example of if the example they used to explain his philosophy was if a masked gunman comes running into the classroom and asks where the teacher is, and all the students know that the teacher is in the photocopying room, you have to, by Kant's philosophy, this is what the teacher said anyway, tell them that the teacher is in the photocopying room. Because otherwise, if you lie to him, that's just wrong. It doesn't matter about the consequences afterwards.
Yeah.
It was a really weird example to be using.
Especially, yeah, that's a bad idea, because most people hate their teachers, and most teachers, in my experience, haven't been... I would happily have sent the gunman into the photocopier room in most of my lessons, with the exception of a couple of good teachers. That's my feeling. But I think... Do you think this whole issue just boils down to consequentialism versus deontology, and you have to judge which is better? Because I like deontology... in the fact that it makes things purer. I only give to charity because it's right, not because it makes me look all Mother Teresa and all la-di-da, isn't he a nice person, and really actually he's a rat, but he just happens to give money to charity. But then suddenly, as you just highlighted, deontology has these crazy, crazy sort of side effects where you'd have to throw your friend in front of a murderer when a little lie would save their life. That is there, I don't know, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I always liked the idea, because Kant was one of the first philosophers that I came across when I did philosophy in sixth form. It's good as a basis of things, but in practice, obviously, it's not going to work. Because from that example, something much worse than lying ended up happening, because you enabled a murder to be committed then.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a strange philosophy. It works in some circumstances, but then you can't make it an absolute rule if it only works in some circumstances.
I know, you can't really... That is a sort of... Kant seems to have some sort of... Is that some sort of weird internal contradiction with Kant? I want to know, is there some... I wish I'd Googled this before the show. Is there some sort of philosophy that kind of tries to combine both? I suppose, would virtue ethics go some way to do something where you... Where you alter your behaviour depending on the circumstance in order to adhere to like a mean, like you're not too courageous because you'd be reckless, but you're courageous enough not to be cowardly, and that seems to have some parameters for movement. Whereas with Kant, it's like you have to do this no matter what.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I just become frustrated with Kant. Maybe virtue ethics. I mean, I don't really know very much about. For someone that goes to a university that is supposed to be one of the top universities in ethics, I've never done any modules in ethics.
That was your choice, though, wasn't it? Like, you can't. You know, I did a couple of modules in ethics, and I've done nearly 45 minutes of radio about it. I guess. Like, oh dear, it's not Radio 4 quality, I admit. But I don't know, what's the best way? I guess we have to sum this up by saying, what do you think is... Charlie, how do you judge deontology against consequentialism? What do you reckon, Nicola? Because they're both aiming at different things. How can you say, oh, well, one's better because it produces better outcomes? That's a consequentialist thing to say. Like,
what's deontology?
When Kant just goes, things are good in themselves. It's about the action, not the outcome.
Oh, well, it's... Didn't you do a show on utilitarianism?
Yeah, I did. And that has some monstrous side effects as well. Like, you can hurt 2,000 people as long as 4,000 people are okay, sort of thing.
I guess so. But in like on the small scale, that's pretty much... You know, you can lie to a murderer if it's going to stop... Like Siobhan said, if it's stopping a murder being committed, a lie's not actually that bad. So,
no.
You know, if it cancels it out, I guess...
Yeah, it's very...
I know it sounds terrible, but, you know, things aren't black and white, are they?
No, I guess it's not. Siobhan, any closing thoughts? Because it does seem that it's very hard. These systems are so difficult, it seems hard to even compare them.
I think that's the problem. That's the point. And I don't think there is a way. I'm sort of reading about duty-based ethics at the moment. I don't think there's a way of combining Kantian ethics with anything else. They all have their problems. Maybe you could be the person that comes up with the blend of all different types of...
Yeah, I've got a huge amount of things on my to-do list tomorrow. Maybe I'll do it after breakfast. I guess the trouble is we always say, well, we always end up with... I tend to agree with consequentialism, but that's just because it's easiest. And that's just because how that our laws, loosely speaking, work on a rule consequentialist basis. We outlaw burglary because it makes the majority of people miserable and it only makes the burglar happy. It's a weird one. So we've just made the philosophy more confusing, I think. Thanks very much, Siobhan. Espy reckons on your kissing lie. Espy says it might be a good thing because the kissing would eventually lose its stigma. I only kiss them. It's not cheating. You know what I mean? Like, oh dearie. Thanks very much for the call, Siobhan.
Thank you.
Cheers. Good night, Siobhan. There calling in. Wow, interesting points there. I guess it's very hard to summarise. It seems to be Kant's theory on morality, I think, I really like it. I like the idea of duty for duty's sake. It seems very pure, very noble, but then...
It's a beautiful idea, yeah. It would be a great world to live in, wouldn't it? But it would be quite boring. Everyone would just go around doing good all the time.
Well, you say that would be boring, but I think I don't, you know, you still have television and music. You just wouldn't,
yeah,
you wouldn't worry
you
about
wouldn't
being
have,
murdered.
You wouldn't have Coronation Street because nobody would ever do anything wrong. You'd be watching programmes about people doing nothing wrong.
But that's assuming everybody follows reason. You'd always get people.
Well, in his world, everybody does.
Well, no, that's not true at all, because Kant says... let's presume Kant is 100% right. Ignore everything we said. Kant is totally right.
Yes, let's presume that.
People aren't always reasonable. Some people don't use their reason, so you would still get some thickos going out there disobeying the categorical imperative. Oh, mate, what have you done to my car? Mate, what about the categorical imperative? Oh, no, he's not listening to reason. It's hopeless. So you'd still need law enforcement and stuff. But what would be easier is that it would be then easier to set laws because the judge could go, well, I've used my reason.
But if that was the case, if you weren't living in his wonderful world where nobody tells any lies, it just wouldn't function, would it? Because you'd have the bad people that it's kind of okay to lie to because you're stopping them from doing bad things.
But the point of having a theory
and
on...
And you'd be saying, oh yeah, sure, my mate's in the cupboard all the time, and everyone would just die. You'd end up with nobody but murderers left.
That's an interesting point.
You'd have like five people left in the world going, oh well, we beat them, we've got nothing, should we just kill each other?
But the whole point of a theory of morality is not to make everyone act the same, but so we know what good and bad is, so we can judge in situations. There's always going to be good and there's always going to be bad. It's just you have to sort out the parameters of which. Final comments from the chat box, Nicola.
Espy says, lying is just a nuance of language, not a moral dilemma.
Yeah, but doesn't language have implications for our reality, Espy? I think it does, doesn't it? Language seems to be... If I went and told my neighbour to F off and they'd be really upset and I
now
say...
Now it's just language,
I'd say, mate. It's just language. It's just
I didn't mean it. It's just words, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just a linguistic construction. It still means... We make these... It's like money is made up. It doesn't stop people going bankrupt and starving because of this imaginary thing we've created.
Yeah, that society is made up of a lot of very... made up things, yeah, like money.
Exactly. So just because something is every
it's like a game, isn't it, with weird rules that everyone's just like, yeah, okay, I'm
yeah,
cool with that.
The games of the football, the rules of football matter a lot if you're playing football.
Mm-hmm.
Outside the game of football, not so much. So it's kind of like that, isn't it? Sure, outside language, it wouldn't matter, but we can't be outside language. This has been Idle Talk. Thank you very much for joining me this evening. We'll be back next week for another mind-boggling topic. Please download the podcast. The last one, we talked about language. How do we talk about things that don't exist? It was a rather complicated topic. You can get that by going onto iTunes. Just go to iTunes, type in Idle Talk. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next week. Thank you. And suggest any topics via my Facebook page. This is Rodders. Good night.